Thank you. we may have realized in our own life that we are sometimes overwhelmed by emotions, and it's difficult to get out of such situations by reasoning and strong voluntary efforts. Drugs help to reconstitute a normal mental state. Compared to some sort of repair of an elective machine.
The situation of these patients is like this.
Church Army out of the Bright area of Karachi to show some of the great machinery on which we depend in all our actions. Based on these facts, we may say in a very general way that all our emotional, mental, and spiritual activities take place within the brain and depend on its proper functioning. If this is true, we eventually should be able to formulate the neurobiological aspect of all our mental states in terms of neuroscience. Since neuroscience applies the principle of causality like physics, it has turned out that brain activities are embedded in the continuous chain of cause and effect, which means that they are determined. Scientists who try to translate our mental activities into terms of neuroscience. According to them, freedom could be regarded as some kind of oscillator situated somewhere in the brainstem. Ethics, philosophy, and religion would be replaced by a profound knowledge of the brain. Because it is the brain which produces all of these cultural phenomena. We can now formulate the following statements. Firstly, the activity of the nervous system reflects the states of our consciousness, and of our emotions. Secondly, the nervous system can be influenced in a direct way by drugs or by localized surgical operations. Every change of the functional state of the nervous system necessarily entails a change in our mental state, which corresponds to the affected nervous subsystem. Ultimately, we do not have any means to resist this influence voluntarily. Thirdly, since neurobiology is science, each the brain mechanisms found follows the rules of natural laws. Thus, as in physics or chemistry, in neurobiology there is no place for human freedom. Having drawn these conclusions, we shall now turn to the question whether there is evidence for human freedom too. So I come to the second part of my talk, which deals with freedom. First, I should like to give you some phenomena and say that what we have heard so far is not essentially new. You have seen in the previous section that we depend on the presence of and the proper functioning of brain structures that are intact on a chemical pathway within the brain. We are struck by them, by the many details which are known today, and by the immense power which we can exert in medical therapy. If, however, we look at this phenomenon from some distance, we will see that there is nothing essentially new. Our ancestors knew already that drugs extracted from plants can influence and determine the degree of consciousness, our emotional state, and wakefulness. One of the known examples of our dependence on the material world are the loss of consciousness when blood pressure is too low, as it might happen in a shock situation, or when the level of glucose becomes too low, as it happens. wretched. Maximilian only realized that this man was needed by his family, whereas he, being a monk, did not have any family ties. So he decided to die in place of him. This decision was not at all caused by external conditions. It was opposed to any kind of legitimate self-interest or sensual motives. Holger was quite young and had a promising future ahead. If we try to identify ourselves with him, we will immediately see the implications of his decision. This heroic example shows that our free will is able to take upon itself a duty which can be in conflict with the most fundamental life interests and is presented to us by reason. To summarize, in this section on freedom, freedom cannot be found in the world of science, in the chain of causal relations of objects in space and time. It is the reality of our immediate self-affirmation. As such, it is the most fundamental reality of our life. Without freedom, the whole context of our social and cultural world would be meaningless. Freedom manifests its reality by acting according to the law or duty that is presented to it by reason. We have seen that we are determined as biological entities. At the same time, we know, we experience that we are free. How can these two opposite statements be reconciled? We shall see in the next and final section of my talk whether or not this problem can be solved. The third and final part of my talk is entitled Brain Physiology and Human Freedom. The accent is on "and". Many people have worked on the problem of determinism and freedom, and accordingly, a variety of different solutions have been proposed. Insufficient solutions are presented, for example, by indeterminism, monism, and dualism. A satisfying solution can be found if we go back to the condition of possibility of knowledge and science. Amongst the insufficient solutions, I come first to indeterminism. With the advent of modern atomic physics, the strict determinism of classical or Newtonian physics seems to be overcome. Classical physics has used the law of causality in the following sense. If the state of a closed system is known completely at any given time, the preceding and the following stage of the system can precisely be determined on principle. This formulation of causality can no longer be applied to quantum mechanics, since a complete knowledge of the present state of a system is impossible. After many years of discussion on this subject, it can be stated now that a general determinism of our phenomenal world can neither be proven nor be refuted. Today, many physicists are inclined to assume that microphysical processes are not determined. We could go even further and ask whether or not the concept of matter, as such, relation, a causal relation between mind and brain, it is not sufficient to observe a regular succession of cause and event. An energy transfer from one substance to the other would be required too. Thus, Eccles loses what he wanted to save. In fact, he implicitly reduces mind to a physiological entity. Now coming to the reflection on the manner of knowing objects. The difficulty inherent in all these theories. This is sleep and children. The difficulty inherent in all these theories which we have discussed so far is that they treat nervous system freedom in an objective manner, which is similar to what has been done in metaphysics for centuries. They do not reflect upon the manner of knowing objects and the constitution of science. How are individual disciplines of science defined? Each individual discipline of science is defined by its material object and by the method which prescribes how this object should be investigated. We call the latter the form object of science. The material object of neuroscience is the brain, which is studied in different ways by morphologists, physiologists, and chemists. The morphologist is interested in structure and spatial organization of connections between neurons. The physiologist is primarily interested in information processing. The chemist in transformation of electrical signals into molecular processes, and vice versa. By these few examples, I would like to point out that the methods and the formal objects are characteristic for each branch of neuroscience. We create or define a particular science in order to know more about our object in a particular respect. Thus, science is our product, our creation. By creating science, we try to understand nature in a way which would not be possible without limiting and defining the formal object and the essence first. Systems of concepts in science and philosophy. Due to its special essence, each science has its own system of concepts. I think of terms like neural, axon, synapse, action potential, and so forth. These terms designate objects which can be analyzed and measured within the limits of a particular science. As long as science remains within its system of concepts, it is consistent in itself. From these considerations, the following statements can be derived. Firstly, concepts like freedom, self, and consciousness do not originate in neuroscience. They originate in our primary life and self-awareness, which has been called by Husserl ursprüngliche Lebenswelt, ethical philosophy. To illustrate this, I would like to show you the last slide. And it's like this. Look at this little child. This child lives in its immediate awareness, affirmation, and consciousness. She is quite happy, and at the same time, This is another kind of knowledge that ought to be learned from scientific observation. We can reflect upon the fundamental characteristics of our existence as it has first been proposed by phenomenology of the soul and philosophy of existence, for example, Heidegger. The limitations we have are mainly related to the fact that we live as a body. Nevertheless, our body is the condition of possibility to live in this world and to have interpersonal communication. The transcendental act of freedom becomes reality in history through our body. In addition, the system of our body is the prerequisite of sensory perception and thus the prerequisite of science. To conclude, on one hand, there is strong evidence that we are subject to laws of nature and therefore determined. On the other hand, we are fundamentally aware that we are free. this question you ask whether the concept of instrument is applied and how the concept of system is different from it. I would like the statute to write to have you a little bit to find the question. stigmatizzazione. Thank you.